Have you ever wondered how to find true happiness at work and in life? What about finding your purpose or becoming the best version of yourself and achieving all of your dreams and desires? Let me share one thing with you. The truth is, you have the power to create your own happiness because happiness is indeed a choice. The Dr. Kiki Ramsey Show is dedicated to helping leaders become happier and more fulfilled at work and in life. I love sharing tools and insights about happiness, positivity, personal and professional development that will help you live a healthier, wealthier, more fulfilled, passionate, and purposeful life. I'm your host, Dr. Kiki Ramsey. Now let's jump into today's episode. Hey y'all, hey y'all, hey y'all. Happy Women's History Month. Y'all, I'm so excited. Y'all see, it's not just me. I got a whole bunch of amazing, awesome, fantastic, all the accolades women here with me today. And we are going to be talking about women who advocate for diversity, equity, and inclusion as we begin to close out this Women's History Month. And I couldn't think of a better way to end out this month than having this amazing panel of women on the show to really dive into what is the future of DE&I, especially for when it becomes to like all women, all diversity. So I can't wait for us to dive in. Ladies, I am so excited that y'all are here. We don't get to do this often. I normally only do this like at least once a year, have a panel and a bunch of amazing women with me. And so Women's History Month is normally one of those months. And so I'm so happy that you all are here. Welcome to the Dr. Kiki Ramsey Show.
Happy to be here.
Yay. So honored to be here.
Yay. I'm so excited. So what we're going to do is, so that everybody knows who you are, I want to go around and give you an opportunity to introduce yourself quickly for us. And then while you're doing that, please share with us your superpower, because you know I believe in strengths, because we all have them. So Charisse, Dr. Cole, let's start with you.
Happily. Again, thank you for inviting me. So happy to be here. I am Dr. Charisse Cole. I am the founder and chief engagement officer of Next Ascension. Next Ascension is an employee engagement and retention consulting firm that operates from a diversity, equity, and inclusion lens. To keep it simple, we just make organizations awesome places to work. That's what we do. But I would say my superpower is relationship building. I love people. I feel like people are resources. If I don't know something, I know another human knows the answer. Humans encourage. Again, they provide resources. We need people to survive. So my superpower is relationship building because I love humans.
I love that. I love that. Yinka.
Hello. Happy to be here. My name is Oluyinka Ajiro-Tutu. So I have over 15 years of experience of healthcare administration, operations, and consulting. And I ultimately got brought in and was so excited about working in diversity, equity, and inclusion, just over those years of seeing healthcare disparities, and also seeing the difference in healthcare outcomes that were taking place within the healthcare organizations I was supporting. So prior to moving into diversity, equity, inclusion, I had a front row seat for all of what happened during the pandemic and truly recognized the need to focus on DEI in a more personal manner. And so I transitioned out of the healthcare system in early 2022 and began to focus on DE&I, specifically working as a dedicated consultant for a number of different organizations. And so I support a number of different nonprofit organizations for DEI within healthcare and technology and other sectors. And also have my own company, which is a health and wellness coaching and public speaking company, in which we're really focused on helping individuals lead a life centered around holistic well-being. And so my superpower, I believe, is as a visionary. And so I work with folks around me, as well as the organizations that I support, to really help them to see beyond their present circumstances and envision what could be. Really helping people imagine the possibilities of what others can see through setting really innovative goals, as well as inspiring others to see their own personal ideas, passion, and enthusiasm.
I love that. Yay. Dr. Maisha.
Hello, hello. I'm Dr. Maisha Claiborne. I'm the founder of the Mind Remapping Company. I'm a physician who practiced integrative medicine physician and transitioned out almost 8 years ago now. And I love the brain and all things human behavior. And so what I do now is I help organizations create cultures where all of their employees feel seen, heard, respected, welcome, and valued. And I do that through teaching psychological safety and trauma-informed communication. And so my superpower is I'm a skill builder. Olienka says she is a visionary. And I thought, who am I? I'm a skill builder. I bridge the gap between learning about a concept, learning about a discipline, and actually being able to do it and apply it in day-to-day life. And that is where I have brought my expertise and my wisdom into the world of equity, diversity, inclusion, and belonging.
I love that. I see some synergy already amongst us. Chelsea.
I am Chelsea Parkinson, and I am the Director of Coaching and Training for the Positive Psychology Coaching and Diversity Institute. So I am Dr. Kiki's partner in crime in bringing diversity and leadership and putting those two topics back together where they belong and taking that to organizations to help them become more inclusive leaders, to build better relationships so that people feel like they belong. And I would say that my superpower is probably communication. I've been a communicator for a very long time. I used to be an executive briefer for the Department of Defense. And so what I love about where I came from with where I am is that I get to merge all of my tools and skills as an expert communicator with all of the ideas of diversity, equity, and inclusion. How do we take those concepts, fold them into our communication so that we are building relationships from a DEI forward place so that we create more DEI forward relationships?
Yay. Thank you. Thank you all for being here. It's so beautiful just to see all of the directions, all of the ways we've come to this work. And I really want to ask you all individually, you know, what really inspired you to become an advocate for diversity, equity, and inclusion? As you know, the whole theme, the national theme of Women's History Month is women who advocate for diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I thought it was important for us to, as women, to be on this panel to talk about this, but all for all us to also look different as well, right? Because we all know that women, we sit at intersections between a lot of different things in our lives. And so I really wanted us to talk about that. But as you know, we were talking about this behind stage. I always love the pre-show because we be dropping gems. Y'all got to be on the show to be on the pre-show. But we be dropping gems. And so, Yinka, you were talking about quickly how, you know, you were so excited about how Dr. Cole was so excited about like the future of DE&I. We're going to get into that later, right? Because we do understand that DE&I, there's a lot of attack going on as it pertains to DE&I, but it doesn't all look bleak. But I want to know what inspired you all to actually become advocates of diversity, equity, and inclusion. Anybody can jump in.
I'm happy to start. I consider myself fairly new, meaning in the last 4 years or so, coming officially into the realm of equity, diversity, and inclusion. And prior to that, I was out of clinical medicine. I was coaching. So I was coaching burned out healthcare professionals. And then we know the pandemic hit, and I have a background in neurolinguistic programming, which is part of my communication background. And when that happened, and I started to see, number one, the mental health crisis that was happening. And then number two, the murders of Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, and George Floyd all in succession. I thought to myself, how can I bring the tools that I have of skill building to this work? And I had to sit back for a moment because I, you know, for me being sort of new stepping into this industry, not having an MPH, not having an African-American studies degree or sociology degree, I had to really look at where can I create that value? And what I was seeing was there was a lot of talking about bias. There was a lot talking about racism. There was a talking about, you know, how to be an anti-racism, but and anti-racism, how to approach DEI, but like not a lot of
what is the day-to-day interpersonal skill that you must build? What is the personal development that must happen? What is the mindset shift? What is the values and belief system that underlies the problem? And that is where I've always sat, at the root cause, even as a family doc. Like, that's why I was integrative medicine, because I want to get to the root of the problem. And that is where my expertise lies. And so that is what inspired me to get in, because I felt like, well, there's a lot of people who are working on systemic change and who have a lot of expertise in the system work and the organizational work. What I have expertise in is shifting beliefs and behavior. And that is also what is needed, top down and individual out.
Amen to that. Amen to that. So much of what you said, it resonates so much with me and how I got into this work as well, in terms of just seeing all these, you know, senseless murders and figuring out there's got to be a better way. Yeah.
I'll jump in if it's okay. And share how I got into this work. Thank you, Dr. Maisha, for sharing your story and your journey. I mean, stories are just so profound to me. And I'll talk about that more in a minute. But I got into this work because I worked in corporate America for 20 years, and I just never felt like my skills were being maximized, utilized. I just never felt like I was being my best self in corporate America. I also never, to be honest, and I've been shy about saying it, but I'm beginning to, you know, become more bold about it. I don't think I was treated fairly, despite being the best sales rep, despite making the company lots of money, despite, you know, giving my all. I could never get myself promoted to a level where, again, my skills were being utilized in a way that we were maximizing my ability. So while working for my last company, I ended up seeking out a coach. I ended up seeking out Dr. Ramsey to help get me to that next step. I was like, what else could I be doing to maximize my skill set? To make a long story short, we had one coaching session. She was like, have you ever considered getting your doctorate? She shared information with me. But by the time we had our next coaching session, I had applied to school already. I was ready to go. I knew this was what I was supposed to be doing. And my research ended up being a qualitative study, because I love stories. I love people's stories. And it ended up being a qualitative study, taking a look at African-American women who were members of their company's employee resource group. And they were attempting, like I was, to ascend within their organization. And I was taking a look at a concept called perceived organizational support. Basically, you know, that I wanted to know how the employees felt their company cared about their well-being. But I wanted to take a look at that in these women who were just as I was while in corporate America. And the results of that study just revealed something that I kind of knew already, was that being a part of these resource groups, being part of communities in corporate America that look like you and have experiences like you, they do help to support you while you're in these spaces, and they help you excel. But that is how I started this work, just being in corporate America and not feeling like I was, you know, utilizing all of my smarts. And I sought out a coach who got me on this path. Next Ascension would not have been born without Dr. Ramsey. So,
sure, Dr. Cole, don't do that, because we ain't trying to be crying up on this podcast today. Okay. But I am grateful for our friendship. I'm grateful for our connection. I'm grateful that you said yes to yourself, right? Like, I think a lot of times when it comes to us women, we know something, you know, and we don't necessarily move when it's time to move because we are fearful. So I just say kudos to you, because you did the work. So you here because you did the work, sis. I love it. Anybody else want to jump in and tell us why you're doing this work?
Sure. So yeah, I love the personal stories, and that each of us, you know, have this journey of reckoning, of recognizing what wasn't working and deciding that we were going to make changes to focus on what could work and where and what was most important. And so, very similar to both of those stories, I had been in the healthcare system for a while. And when the pandemic hit, I was working as the administrator for family medicine at Emory Healthcare, and really had a front row seat to see the impact of the pandemic and the disproportionate impact on communities of color, as well as marginalized communities, and to also feel this sense of just helplessness to be able to help and to support. And so very similar to both of you, I had a moment where I sat back and said, hey, I've been working in this healthcare system for 15 years, working on disproportionate impact and inequitable outcomes and many of the things that were important and were necessary. And when the pandemic hit, I recognized that there were so many different areas outside of the healthcare system that served as the root causes for what we were seeing in the healthcare system. Mm-hmm. So for example, access to education, being able to get access to nutrition, being able to get access to medicine and having the ability to actually have the funds to support getting consistent access to that medication. And so I recognize that I needed to have a different lens and focus on this DEI work from outside of the healthcare system to try to reduce some of those root cause effects that I was seeing. And so parallel to that, I was also dealing with a lot of overwhelm and burnout currently within the healthcare system. For those working in the pandemic, unless you did it in the healthcare system, it's hard to explain. But it was a very chaotic, very overwhelming experience just due to the lack of information and the needs of our patients and the needs of everyone within the system at that time and the mental health and physical health concerns, which Dr. Maisha mentioned. And so I myself found myself overwhelmed and burnt out and needing to take care of myself. And I think it's really important that we, you know, always talk about well-being within this conversation of DE&I because they are very much linked and connected. And so I also made a personal decision that I needed to take care of myself and step out of that healthcare system to be more effective, as well as to make sure that I was honoring myself spiritually, mentally, and physically in all aspects. And so that change has been so powerful for me as far as being able to really take care of myself in a very intentional manner and be very intentional about the work that I'm able to do outside of the system that can then impact the system. So for example, I'm working with the healthcare system right now on how do we take better care of women and children within the Colorado healthcare system, but being able to tap into the social determinants of health, such as access to education and access to medication, has been incredibly powerful to be able to see how that is now affecting, you know, how the patients are experiencing it inside the healthcare system and in those appointments with their physicians and other healthcare professionals. So that's my story.
I love it. People don't realize how deep this goes, right? These are just not just us saying, you know, a lot of times I think in the pandemic, they're like, oh, people just jumped up and was like, oh, I'm just going to be a DE&I consultant because I have a lived experience or whatnot. But our stories go deep, deep. And I love that because, and we're doing some really, really good work around it. So thank you for that. Appreciate it. Chelsea?
So my path kind of like came and went. I started DEI work inside the Department of Defense, which is unsurprisingly really a man's world. And so my first dive into DEI was really about women and noticing there weren't a lot of women leaders. There wasn't a lot of talk about how we ensure that women were getting the same, not just the same opportunities, but that they were ready for those opportunities. Because I was finding that women were being given the opportunity because DEI was a check the box where we need to have a certain number of women in power, but they weren't given the same opportunities to get where they needed to be so that when they got into leadership, they were unprepared. And so it was perpetuating a narrative that, well, women don't belong in these roles because look what happens. No. Women need the right training. They need the right access. They need from the start to be given the same opportunity so that when they get there, they're ready. And so I joined some of the councils and the ERGs and things while I was inside the Department of Defense. And that kind of blew the doors open for me that, well, this isn't just women. There's a lot of different layers to this that as a white person were things that I was aware of, but I wasn't living. Mine was, it's women. It's hard being a woman, but there were more layers to that. So that was inside the DOD. I got really interested in why certain paths had more white people than anything else, and why a lot of our Black employees were in HR, but they weren't in some of the more technical expertise areas, and got really curious about, well, where are we recruiting from? What are our partnerships with different colleges? What are we doing to plant the seed so that 10 years from now, we're not still talking about how this pod is a whole bunch of white men? And I got really disenfranchised by that over time and decided, you know what? I don't belong in an organization and in a system that isn't prioritizing how we plant seeds so that the garden looks the way we need it to look. And so I was in the process of becoming a coach, and then divine intervention met Kiki along the way. And when she launched PCADDY and told me about it, I was like, that is where I need to be. That's the parts of what I loved about what I did in the DoD without the parts that I didn't love, and gave me an opportunity to be that advocate and that ally to say, I'm a different face. And sometimes people need to see Kiki, and sometimes they need to see me. And sometimes they need to hear me say, hey, as white people, this is our responsibility to this work. This is the privilege. This is the access that we have. You're already white people in leadership. How do we take that and merge the work that needs to be done so that, again, 5-10 years from now, it looks different? So I kind of like a circle around from one career to the next, but all of the most important parts of what I've done for the past 15 years kind of all coming to a head inside of the organization that Kiki and I get to do every day.
And I love that. And that's why I was talking about, I was like, we have to show this on this show, because I think that, you know, Chelsea, it's always interesting when we have these conversations and you and I both show up, and then people always think about diversity as a color thing. And yeah, I mean, we, you know, the rest of us on this panel, we can't take off our color, but it goes so much deeper. But I also realized that in this work, sometimes people can't hear based on what they see. They can't hear me based on what they see. But you, they can hear you, because you look like a lot of the people who we work with doing this work. And it has been a beautiful thing to see you operate the way that you do around this work. And I know I asked you this question once before, but I want to start with you with this question. What role do you think, you know, white people and people who don't have a color diversity play in this work of DE&I? Because, you know, we come to it from a strengths-based perspective, but a lot of people are scared. And so I really wanted to have that conversation with you, because I think it's an important one to have. Hey, beautiful. I'm so glad you're enjoying the Dr. Kiki Ramsey Show. I just wanted to take a quick moment to invite you to Happy Women Lead. Happy Women Lead is a private leadership and professional development community for women just like you. If you are looking for the tools and the resources to balance your happiness while succeeding professionally, then this is the community for you. I understand all so well how hard it can be to balance life, family, and your career. And that's why I created Happy Women Lead. I'm excited to share it with you. I can't wait to see you over there. So join me over at happywomenlead.com. See you there.
I think it's a couple of layers. I think when I think about the types of conversations that I have based off of my role in our organization, it starts as like a similarity bias, right? Like, they look like me. And so the conversation feels safer upfront to have, because there's an assumption that I will get it, or that I think similarly. And I think what's beautiful about that to begin with is it gives people the opportunity to feel safe to say, it's a conversation that they can have slightly differently with their own community, right? Like, when you feel like somebody gets it, when you automatically assume, for better or for worse, that somebody will get it, you're a little bit more likely to be honest. And that's what we need in this work. I need to know that people don't know, that they haven't tried, that they did it wrong. Like, those are all things when we're designing client programming and we're thinking about what an organization needs. I need the honesty. I need to know, while we're, you know, I'm ashamed to say that we've done DEI like a check the box. Okay, cool. That lets me know you have an interest, you started. Maybe it wasn't the best approach that you could have taken, but it gives me a baseline for how to help people get where they're going. So it builds a little bit of safety, even though underneath it, I don't think the same. I'm not exactly on the same page about these things, but it's an invitation. It's an open door for people to start talking. I think the second half of that is remembering that diversity is not just the skin deep part. And whenever we teach that for people, sometimes it blows their mind to remember that diversity has lots of slices and dices. We've got, you know, neurodivergence, and we've got sexual preference, and we've got all of these things that make people different where they haven't necessarily been able to find a home inside of their organizations. And so I like to use the fact that I don't look particularly diverse to share, actually, if you were to slice and you were to look underneath about, you know, what else has happened in my life or where I come from or anything else about me, you're making a lot of assumptions. The same way that people might make assumptions about everybody else on this call, you're also assuming that because I present as, you know, a standard white woman, so you're missing what else can be underneath the surface. And I do think that still in this culture, that again is an easier door for me to open to invite people in than it might be for somebody who presents already diverse. So to kind of put a bow on all of that, I think really being the ally that you can be when you have the doors already open. So if I already have the doors open and I can continue to open them for other people, why would I not do that when that's the access and privilege that I have? And I would hope that regardless of, you know, where people live in our country right now, I'm in Florida, so diversity is a sensitive topic. And I am still over here calling myself the director of coaching and training for a diversity institute. Because at the end of the day, I have a 4-year-old daughter who looks like me, and I want it to be different 10 years from now. I want her to, you know, be able to see a completely different society than the one that we are in right now. And to know that she has a social responsibility to upholding what we're creating right now.
I love that. And it is just so necessary. And I think that we've been able to show that. And you've navigated the landscape so beautifully. So I appreciate you for that. And just for being in this with us, because diversity, equity, and inclusion is not just one person's job. I love how Isabel Wilkerson, the author of Cast, she said, America is an old house. And as it being an old house, it's all of our jobs to fix it. You wouldn't buy an old house and go into the old house and it has leaks and a hole in the roof and be like, look, I ain't fixing that. This wasn't my problem, right? You're going to move in and you're going to get the fixing because you need it to be better for you. So I appreciate that. So Dr. Maisha, you've had this in the past, this successful career in medicine. And I'm always intrigued when you come from like, you know, medicine, an MD, you know, we, not to negate. So there's MDs, there's PhDs. Girl, you had a lot of schooling. You was a whole MD. You still are, you know, a whole MD. And you saw these disparities in the healthcare system. And you're like, I need to transition. Can you tell us about that transition and just how you've benefited from just making that transition, even maybe mentally, emotionally, with the work that you're doing now?
Sure. So what I'll say is that I have always been an outside of the box kind of person, you know, and also transitions not new to me from a lived experience standpoint. I've lived, moved around a lot, and there's been a lot of that. And for me, the transition was about two things. It was about impact, and it was also about lifestyle. I have a son, he's 9. And I am a co-parent, but my co-parent lives out of state. So I live the single mom life most days. And so for me, having my son at a very late age, well, let me reframe that.
You know.
At a later age than maybe most people, 39, I had spent most of my time in my career. And so it was really a point of completion and a point of wanting to be the most present parent that I could be. And also feeling like I was already at a point of, well, I really want to make a bigger impact. And the one-to-one patient care, while I know it was making impact, I felt like I could be doing more. Mm-hmm. So like my first transition into coaching physicians, the mindset was, well, if I can impact, you know, physician and healthcare workers, and I can impact thousands of patients. Right. So that was behind my first transition. And then the transition into organizations was very similar. Like if I can impact organizations at the leadership level, then I'm impacting whole organizations and their families and generations.
And so for me, behind the transition was impact. And it has benefited me because contrary to what most people see and may not know is that I am an introvert, which means I get to work from home now. And I love my own company.
Yes.
Yeah. And I do get to like have the freedom to be with my son and to play with him and to do the things mm-hmm. that I wouldn't have thought to do before I was working from home. It was just the hustle. It was the back and the forth. And so that's how it's benefited me personally. I think that's how it's benefited my son and my family to be able to now travel and see my dad. My family lives all over the place. And so to go from being by myself a lot to mm-hmm. now incorporating my values of family and also impact and contribution and skill building mm-hmm. with other people, that's the life, man.
I love that. Oh my God. And you know, being a mom, I know how important it is to be able to feel like we're present and still be able to do the work, right? And Olayinka, I really want you to speak to that because you speak to audiences about workplace stress even, right? Even then, like, and what connection do you see wellness, overcoming stress, all of these things that affect us in a way, what is the connection between that and DE&I? Because I can remember when all these senseless murders happened, we was just tired. Okay. Like if you talk to any Black person during that time, we were just tired. I just want to know what's the connection and then maybe even some tools or some tips that you would give to help us because everybody on this panel, we're still in it. Like it's just because, you know, nothing has happened. Like we're still in it because things have still happened.
Yeah. So there is a weight to discriminatory practices, to bias, to exclusive workplaces. And there is a weight that comes with being discriminated, not just at work, but also outside of work. And so we are seeing, and I will say from a healthcare standpoint, you know, we see as healthcare providers and healthcare practitioners, the effects of that stress when it comes to healthcare outcomes, when it comes to quality of life. And so it is incredibly important that we recognize the responsibility that we have within the work that we do to ensure that well-being is a part of the conversation. And so when you have inclusive work environments, they reduce stress. And so fostering a sense of belonging, I love what you shared, Chelsea, about psychological safety, disarming, you know, individuals so that they can be open and honest is incredibly important. And so when individuals feel valued, respected, included, they're less likely to experience, you know, the stress that's related to often that discrimination, bias, or marginalization. Organizations that actively address these things by implementing DEI initiatives, by changing the systems that are undergirding a lot of the discrimination, the bias, and the exclusivity that we see, really help to reduce the stressors for individuals associated with unfair treatment and systemic inequities. And a lot of times when we're rehauling the people services, whether it be looking at how we can provide paternal leave along with maternal leave, when we're looking at providing advancement and promotion, as well as, and I can't remember who talked about it, but it was a great point, and the point that why, you know, are there some individuals that have access to promotion, advancement, mentorship, and sponsorship, and then others that do not? And so those have long-term impact on a person's ability to care for themselves and to care for their families and the legacy that they're going to be able to provide to their families over time. And so there is such a interwoven connection between the work that we're doing personally with individuals with DE&I, work that we're doing with organizations in DE&I, and the outcomes that we're going to see when it comes to health and well-being. And when it comes to organizations, I do want to just share this philosophy that is so important that when we're doing this DE&I work, that organizations are not running ahead without understanding the importance of doing the personal work that's connected to DE&I. Many organizations want to jump in, right? I want to put out a statement. I want to do the plans. I want to change our system. Great. But how are you doing the personal work and confronting the discrimination, the biases that you have personally that are impacting the way that you work, right? And so those journeys have to happen simultaneously. And then that is when we start to see the effects and the positive benefits when organizations are changing and individuals are changing simultaneously. And it's important that they are progressing at the same time, right? Because we often see leaders that are not prepared. They're not ready to actually move forward with the work that they say that they want to do. And that's really hard for staff. That's really hard for the communities that you serve when you have leaders that are not ready to really deal with the burden and the weight that can often come with DE&I work, because it's challenging. It's a personal journey and it's also an organizational journey. And then, of course, there's a communal journey that happens as well. So those things are really important to make sure you're considering.
That's so good. That's so good. And you're so right. Me and Chelsea, it's like we have to convince people to start with the person. And I don't understand why we have to do that, because guess what? People do the output. Like, people are the people who, you know, we are the ones who put out the work, right? There is no organization without people. Mm-hmm. And so if you cannot first start with the person and orient them to where they stand with diversity, equity, and inclusion, you ain't getting nowhere. You're not teaching people how to hire diversely when they can't even see their own unconscious bias. Yes. Like, how does that not make sense? Mm-hmm. And so I'm so glad that you said that. Dr. Cole, when we first started off, we started working together. I was like, please come help me with all of your beautiful DE&I knowledge that you have. And so you've moved on and you're the founder and chief engagement officer of Next Ascension, which I love the name. And you explained it in the beginning of like ascending to the next level, which is where your research actually came from as well. So can you share any kind of like innovative approaches or some of the things that you've implemented in some of the organizations that you've worked for that, you know, tend to foster diversity, equity, and inclusion, because it's so needed?
So absolutely. And I love what Yinka said about the work starting with people. And this is how Next Ascension, how we approach our work. So we always suggest, so instead of just throwing stuff up against the wall, right? Instead of doing some training, instead of doing, you know, some recruiting, instead of doing, you know, just throwing stuff up against the wall, we always strongly encourage, suggest, insist that organizations start off with creating a strategy first. And we label it a diversity, equity, and inclusion strategy. We have some companies where justice is really important in their work. So we'll call it JEDI, justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion, whatever you want to call it. You want to add belonging in it, whatever you want to call it, we will call it that. At the end of the day, you need a strategy. So we go in and we fully diagnose organizations. And how we explain this to organizations is that if you were to go to the doctor and say you were sick, you had a cough, you had, you know, a stomach ache or your foot was hurting, the doctor is going to diagnose you. That's what we do to your organization. We come in and diagnose your organization. We do surveys, we do one-on-one interviews, we do focus groups, and we take a look at any other data the organization has collected over the years, and we make it part of our assessment and part of our analysis when we are diagnosing the organization. Then we offer up recommendations and solutions to heal the organization or to create that diversity, equity, and inclusion strategy that they need in order to do the work. And the good thing about this, and this is what I tell organizations when people say, you know, what should we do first? I don't know your organization, right? So what works for one organization may not be what works for the other organization, which is why we customize our strategy to fit your organization. And we collect the data from employees in your organization so we have their voices, which makes it so much better when you're trying to roll out this strategy, because the employees see their voices and the strategy that's created. But to answer your question, some of the things that we have seen are repeated, we see coaching a big one. Coaching is a big one, whether it's group coaching or whether it's one-on-one coaching. We see that leaders need coaching. They need a safe space to just mess up and have someone to talk through the remedy or just how to fix that. Another thing we see that is a standard is creating a DEI task force, a DEI council, that has really good leadership and support that's going to help execute the strategy. Because again, once we create the strategy, somebody has to fulfill it. It doesn't just sit on the shelf. Usually the DEI task force or the DEI council is the team that takes this strategy we've created and they insist or they create a process for its execution. We've also seen as a commonality, creating a safe space to have conversations. So whether it's a crucial conversation or hard conversation, whatever you want to call it, we've created a framework in order for those conversations to continue to exist. Now, most consultants will say, you know, they try to create processes within organizations to try to keep the organization dependent on the consultant. So the consultant will always be needed, kind of always have a job as they continue to move through. We don't function like that. We want organizations to be able to exist without us because we feel like the work is so important that we want to be able to spread our goodness. We want to be able to spread this framework or this tactic, or we want all organizations to have strong DEI strategies, not just this one. So we want to be able to make organizations self-sufficient so that they can continue to execute and fly in doing the work.
Love it. I love it because, and you mentioned having safe space to have conversations. That is so important. I think that if more companies even just did that one little piece, we will be in a much better situation and not so much pent up tension among us as employees of organizations because we feel like we can't talk about anything. And when we do, it's going to be taken in the wrong context or that kind of thing. And so I love that. Thank you for that. Okay, y'all. So, you know, it's been a very interesting last couple of years. And the landscape of D&I has been really, really interesting from it's gone from like check the box to like, oh no, we got to make, you know, this a part of our organization to check the box to like, oh no, we got to get rid of all these CDOs, chief diversity officers that we hired because we're going in a new direction. So based on all of this current landscape, I mean, we have books being banned. I mean, like literally people are saying and taking books out of schools and colleges and saying, nobody can read these books because they talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I think it's one thing to say that your child can't read a book, but I also think it's a different thing when you say no child or no person can read this book. So we got books being banned. We have affirmative action being struck down. Affirmative action, just something that's been in place forever, struck down. We have the word diversity, equity, and inclusion can't be used, especially when you're getting government funds. And a lot of universities are changing, you know, departments and titles, and it can't say diversity, equity, and inclusion. I was like, Lord, what are they going to mean for the Positive Psychology Coaching and Diversity Institute, honey? You know, it's in our name. We have all of these changes to countless laws that further disenfranchise marginalized people. So the question is on the table, what do you think the future of DE&I is?
I think all of us probably want to chime in at once. I know. I'll start us off here. So DEI isn't dead. It just isn't dead. DEI to me is also employee engagement. It's employee engagement and it's a maximization of skill set. That's what it is. So whether we call it DEI, whether we call it employee engagement, whether we call it an inclusive culture, whatever we call it, it is needed in order to get employees to maximize their skill set and to be able to operate at their maximum level of efficiency, which is what organizations want people to do. Amen. So DEI definitely isn't dead. I think we have to reframe or rebrand how we approach it, but the work continues. When I started Next Ascension, really 3 years ago, it was a diversity, equity, and inclusion consulting firm. That's what it was. And then we went in and did the work that, you know, that way that I described. We go in, diagnose the organization, offer up a strategic plan, and then we help the organization execute the strategic plan. Now we call ourselves an employee engagement consulting firm. We do the same thing. Our framework hasn't changed, right? Going back to my doctor example, so whether you're, and again, Dr. Maisha, you can relate to this, whether you're coming in with a tummy ache, whether you're coming with your foot hurting or headache, the diagnosis still needs to occur. right? Again, whatever we call it, the work will continue. And again, my belief is that the goal at the end of the day is to maximize the level in which the employee is operating, to which diversity, equity, and inclusion, employee engagement, inclusive cultures are needed in order to get that.
I love that. I love it. And I also love like the first statement, DEI is not dead. You know, DEI can act like a whole bunch of different things in an organization. And what we say even in PCADI is that you can't decouple DEI from leadership. A good leader needs to understand diversity, equity, inclusion and be inclusive. So yeah, I agree with you on that.
And that's where I was going to go, Kiki, was when I think about how we talk about DEI, we don't even really talk about DEI as DEI because DEI is not anything without all of the human-based skills and the behaviors that create it. So mm-hmm. although we have diversity in our name and that is the goal, all of the things that all of the tools and skills that we teach and that we coach around, you could call them leadership, you could call them humanity, you could call them whatever you want to call them, because diversity, equity, and inclusion is a result of many of the things we talked about on this call, mindset and empathy and communication and relationships. And so I think it's a little bit of watch the right hand and the left hand is over here and we're going to change out the word DEI for leadership and we're going to do some of these things that we've already been doing in the background in places where, you know, like in Florida, our clients in Florida, we don't use DEI. This is leadership training that is focused on. But to, you know, Dr. Cole's point, we're still doing the exact same processes. Our systems haven't changed. Our approach doesn't change. We're still bringing people back to, but what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to have powerful relationships? What does it mean to step into empathy? What does it mean to become aware? All of these tools and skills that are basics of humanity, but they are why we became a non-inclusive culture to begin with, because people stopped practicing the human skills. People stopped practicing being in empathy and being human first. And that's how we got there. So, you know, I'm on the same page with Dr. Cole about it doesn't really matter what we call it. We could call it purple. We could call it whatever. You know, like it's the systems, that the human-based behavioral and cognitive systems that need to be changed so that when people are approaching different people, different experiences, they're seeing it differently. So, you know, DEI, it can't be dead because people are still existing.
Exactly. No, I always say DEI is a human problem. Like, I mean, if you think about it, at the end of the day, DEI comes down to giving everybody the respect and allowing them to have the dignity that they were born with, treating everybody as a human being. That's diversity, equity, and inclusion. At the end of the day, that's what it is. And so I feel like it can never die because we're never going to stop needing to treat people with dignity and respect.
Absolutely. And just 1,000% on what Chelsea and what Dr. Cole said. And to add to that, you know, one of the things that I'm seeing as I'm, you know, inside of organizations is exactly what Dr. Cole said. They're doing the work and they're maybe rebranding it, renaming it, calling it something different. And I do think that all of the banning and that's going on, all of the pushback that's going on is a representation of the fear that is happening in our nation around it, in our world around it. And for those who have children, have toddlers, you know, when a toddler throws a temper tantrum, if you ignore the temper tantrum, guess what? It gets worse. And so I think what we're seeing is a temper tantrum just before the extinction. And of course, that's a long process. There's still a lot of systemic work to be had. But I think that all of this is a representation of that fear and of that. And mm-hmm. So by and large, the organizations themselves, they still are doing the work, even with roles being taken away, maybe changed or renamed. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm hearing from the inside as I talk to different organizations. They're saying, oh, we're seeing a need more than ever. And so there is a lot of media around what's happening, but there's not a lot of media about what's happening in the background. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to kind of add that in.
I love that because there is a lot that's happening in the background. There's still people who, and we were just talking about it, how we consistently have calls with organizations every day that are still committed to this work. And some of them are not changing the name, right? And I think that we have to understand when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion and the way people think about it, you know, the country may be split, the world may be split on how they think about it, but there's still that other half, right? Like, so a lot of times, you know, when we talk about positive psychology, we're just saying, let's talk about the strengths as well, right? There's still that other half of the world, the country, whatever, who are saying, no. We still stand for that in our organizations, in our families. We still stand for treating people with dignity and respect. We still stand for it. So I think that that's a beautiful point that you make, is that people are fearful, right? Change. People get scared of change. And especially when elections come around, it's a lot of change that can potentially happen. And so that fear is propagated up. So I think that we just have to continue to understand and know where we stand around it.
Yes, so good. I want to double tap on everybody. That was awesome. And just add that, you know, when we look at this human rights movement that we've seen in our country, it is a cyclical experience, right? We take 2 steps forward, 3 steps back, 4 steps forward, 2 steps back. It is a cyclical, like, we don't need to look much further than the civil rights movement, right? To see how there was that push and pull of support and then resistance before the breakthrough went up. Obviously, we're still very much in the midst of a civil rights movement. And so I totally agree that people are fearful and are pushing back for that reason, and also want to say the numbers don't lie. And I think that's what a lot of leaders who are responsible and focused on human see, that when you have diverse, equitable, inclusive teams, right, they, you get better decision-making, problem-solving, innovation, you can attract top talent. I mean, Gen Z is saying, this is a criteria that I'm looking for when I decide to select an organization that I'm going to work at. By 2030, we're going to have so much diversity around ethnic and racial diversity, cultural, generational diversity. And so really, it just does not make sense to not invest in this DE&I work. It is not just like a business imperative, it's also a moral and ethical and human rights imperative. And so I agree. I think DE&I is safe and healthy, and agree that it will just look different, but it will continue to live on.
I love it. I love it. I love it. And it's so true. It's going to continue to live on, and the diversity is going to continue to grow. So you can't ignore something that's going to grow. like you can try, but you can't ignore it. Okay. Y'all. Oh my God. I can't believe the hour is almost over. Okay. Quick. I want you all to, like, rapid fire. Give me what advice do you have for any kind of individual or organization looking to initiate or improve their diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives within the organization or within themselves?
I'll start. And I feel like this is probably going to be co-signed because I hear so much synergy and I love it. And thank you, Dr. Kiki, for having us all. I'm going to say, do not skimp on the personal development. Like, really, really. I think that the personal development, the emotional intelligence, the, like, all of those, the skill building, the individual skill building, is the thing that, as we say, the people are build the system that makes the difference. So do, like, invest in that.
I love that.
I'm going to build on that and say strategic plan. You need a DEI strategic plan specifically that is birthed out of your organization's strategic plan. And with that, usually we see that there's some skill development in that. In fact, all the time we see there's some skill development in that. But I would say strategic plan. Don't just throw stuff up against the wall, but be intentional about what you're doing around DEI and have your employees' voices in that process.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yes, I am going to double tap on that and add, yes, you have to elevate those with lived experience. You have to make sure they're at the table as you're building. You have to elevate those from marginalized communities. Often leaders go off into a back room and think that they know what's best for an organization or for a community, and they don't. And so you have to ensure that you are bringing the right individuals to the table from the beginning, including them, hearing their voices, elevating them, and making sure that their voices are reflected in the work that you're doing.
Love that. Love it, love it, love it.
And that partners really nicely with what I was going to say, which is for all of my white friends that are watching this, is be the person who says, as a white person, I still want diversity. I still want this work. I still stand for this work. Because they're going to expect it from people who don't look like us. If you are also saying it, that this matters to you too, then you have to be that person who can be that ally to make sure those voices are at the table, to make sure that those things are still being lifted up when people who do look like us are trying to put it back in a box and put it back on a shelf. So please be the ally that you can be and ensure that everything that was just shared can happen because you are propelling it forward as well.
I love that. And I would say, tap into the strengths of your employees. Tap into the strengths of the people who are in your organization. You hired people in your organization because they were strong at something, and allow that to come out to help guide you along this path when it comes to DE&I. Oh my God, this has been so great. So before we jump off, I do want you all to tell everybody how they can get in contact with you, how they can find you.
All right, I'll start us off. Again, I'm Dr. Charisse Cole, and you can catch Next Ascension at nextascension.com, and it's spelled A-C-C-E-N-S-I-O-N. It's a play on the words access and ascend. So again, you can catch us on nextascension.com, and you can catch us on Instagram, Next Ascension.
Yay.
Awesome. So I'm on all the socials under Yinka Ajira Tutu. So Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, there. And then, of course, my website, olayinkaspeaks.com. We'd love to connect with you.
Perfect.
You can find me at www.mindremappingacademy.com. So that's mind, M-I-N-D, remapping, R-E-M-A-P-P-I-N-G. Academy, like the school.com. And I'm on all the socials, but mostly if you want to connect, LinkedIn, Instagram, / Dr. Maisha.
Awesome.
And I will round us out. You can find me either under my name or on any of PCADI's, PPCADI, on any of our socials, or our website is a great way to connect with me as well.
Awesome. Thank you, ladies. Oh my God. This was so just, I think the word that I want to use, refreshing. You know, I think that's the word that I want to use. You all are so brilliant in just everything that you do. And I just want to say thank you for being who you are. Thank you for being in my life. I know all of you personally. And I know that what you give to the world is something so amazing. And the world is better off because you are in it. I want to say happy Women's History Month to you all, to all of the Kiki Ramsey family. Happy Women's History Month to you all as well. And remember that you have a responsibility to go out there and create your own happiness. It's up to you. All right, y'all. Peace. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Dr. Kiki Ramsey Show. And as always, remember to create your own happiness, because happiness is in fact a choice. If you've enjoyed listening to this episode, please share this podcast with your friends and colleagues. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you'll get notified whenever I drop a new episode.